Welcome to another episode of Building in the Wild. I'm Gabriela, your Brazilian guide for today's conversation with Sean Rolfe, founder of Copycat. Sean's founder journey has been sown with curiosity and adventure. As the lead apricot, Sean has leveraged the collective creativity of the Copycat team to build wildly compelling and aligned narratives for companies across the world. His journey has seen sweat, tears, fire, and a variety of inspiring and jaw-dropping moments. Every memorable story has a fair share of surprises, and I can assure you that this is a narrative that is worth following along. I'll pass it over to Roman to kick off the conversation.
I'm stoked to have the conversation. It's, like an absolute pleasure just listening to some of the wisdom that you have and going through the Copycat. I'd love for you to just go ahead and dive in. Tell us a bit about who Copycat is.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the sake of this conversation, it's probably best to start at the inception point.
Sure.
So I, like many writers, had the completely original dream of going to Los Angeles and becoming a famous Hollywood screenwriter. I moved there when I was 19 and pursued that pursuit for about 4 years until I was 22. And at the time I was working at a different company and I kind of started taking copywriting gigs on the side. The reason being is, like, you know, when you're a screenwriter, optioning a script and getting something sold is very difficult. Oftentimes you'll work 2 or 3 years on a pilot or what have you, and you'll option it for $5,000, $10,000. That's like your entry point into it. And so I was just trying to figure out a way to kind of monetize the talent. And it's what I've loved doing, you know? And so when I first got my kind of foot in the door with copy, I was really fascinated. I was like, well, we go out and we research articles and we get paid per word and we turn it in and that's that. It was just really, it was a concept that, like, didn't even live in my head that you could just get paid as a writer, you know? And what ended up happening is I started working with a bunch of different agencies, writing all different types of copy across mediums and then across different industries. But there's actually one, like, specific inciting incident that really, really gave birth to the idea of Copycat, which is that I got put on this really huge spread of content. I want to say it was something like 100,000 words that needed to get turned over in 30 days. And this really, really incredible big agency was tasked with managing the entire project. And they brought like 20, I want to say over 20 writers into it. And we had this huge spreadsheet that we were all populating with content. There were multiple different touch points and account managers and SEO strategists. And what happened was I finally kind of had visibility into my peers and into what other copywriting looked like. And the first thing that I realized is, whoa, there's a huge disparity of quality here. You have 2 to 3 writers that are writing content that is almost poetic and can live in its own publication. You have 2 to 3 writers that are writing content that doesn't even look publishable. And then you have all these writers kind of in the media, and it just looked like a quality control nightmare. Yeah. And so I kind of started, like, digging into that a little bit just because I was curious and, like, okay, so this is how this process is working. You know, agencies are going out to these big freelance platforms like Upwork, and they're sourcing writers and they're bringing them into these big spreads. And when I really took a look at that, one of the things that I realized is that it fundamentally didn't really add value to the creative process in terms of how it was structured. You had SEO strategists and, like, account directors at agencies that had no editorial background tasked with editing thousands and thousands of words of actual content. And then you had a bunch of writers that were fractured across briefs that didn't really have that much ubiquity or maybe lacked a little bit of clarity. And so what I did is I called some of my agency friends and I was like, hey, does a company exist where, in theory, you could take these huge volume projects and send it directly to, like, a single point of contact? They then turn to an editorial team and turn back something that's, you know, written by their own writing team and completely quality controlled end to end. And they said, no, but that sounds lovely. At the time, you know, there was a lot of copy mills and, like, content farms. And typically you'd go onto the website and there's, like, an intake form and you select your blog type and you put your industry and your topic title. Or you had copywriting agencies, which would just, like, kind of source writers for you. They'd be like, hey, you know, Roman, here's a couple of writers. And you would kind of be in the same position where you needed to manage everything. And so From that point, I decided to build our first little quality control engine.
And so when you started that journey, that foray in LA, it seems like you had a knack for what was quality and what wasn't quality. Was that coming from you intrinsically, or were there, you know, managers or people that were saying, this isn't good, we need to reformat, we need to rewrite it? Or was it kind of more introspective?
It's a great question. You know, I'd been studying the art form of writing since I was like 14 years old. The type of individual that I think for 3 years, I read a book every week. That was part of my discipline. Just really obsessed with the craft of writing. And so when I stepped into copy, I brought a lot of the mechanics and science of screenwriting into the space. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting is there were a lot of parallels, you know, like in a script, when it comes to pacing, sometimes you want to use a lot of white space. So you build tension through dialogue, and you use dialogue to actually guide the reader to maybe a slower moment. You want to get into a scene late and you want to leave early, right? So you don't need to like build too much context. So when you apply that, like, let's say to just a blog, a lot of the mechanics make sense and share symmetry. So I was kind of already coming into copywriting with this very creative but disciplined angle, which I think allowed me to look at some of this content and see where it was falling short, or look at some of this content and say, wow, this is an incredible writer.
Yeah. And I suspect that within the creative realm of writing, there's a wide variety of what people would qualify as quality work. And so
yeah,
it has their different slant on that. So that's really interesting. But then it sounds like this is the point in time in which your kind of founder vision set in.
Yeah.
And so what steps did you take after that?
The immediate steps after that were relatively simple. I went out to all of my extremely talented writer friends who I knew were also struggling to make money from writing. And I said, can I teach you how to write copy? And would you like to dedicate maybe a year of your life to this little engine that could? And maybe we can go and disrupt the copywriting field and marketing. That's really what it was. I just brought my friends together, all the friends that I had in LA, a lot of screenwriters, a couple of novelists, a couple of poets. And we just really had one tagline and kind of one mission that we shared, which is that we wanted to make the internet readable. Because at the time, you know, there was a lot of black hat SEO practices. So a lot of spam content, low effort content that was just, you know, kind of plastered on the page for rankings. So we considered ourselves kind of like the renegades of marketing in terms of really approaching everything from the lens of creative and the art form of writing.
And I feel like you're foreshadowing a bit in terms of maybe some of that lackluster quality content that comes out. We'll get to that here in a little bit. So when you think about that point in time, when you're getting this renegade group of creatives together and helping to teach them writing, what was your founder vision at that point? Was it this grandiose plan to conquer the internet, make the internet readable? What was your vision like on day one?
So such a good question. Vision on day one was, if we could elevate the standard of copywriting across the board, then we could set the standard of what excellence looks like here. You know, there was just so many opportunities for improvement. I'll give you an example of like how the model kind of began to evolve. When we started looking at, you know, just like the basic agency ecosystem, one of the first things that we recognized is like, okay, so they go out, they bring on clients of all different shapes and sizes across all different industries, and they offer various different types of marketing strategies and marketing services that range across different channels. And they go and they bring this generalist copywriter in, and they're like, hey, go over to fintech and write us a white paper, and then jump over to fashion and write the most incredible branding and web copy that we've ever seen. And the reality is that as writers, we all have our strengths. You know, we all have our niches. That's why genres exist. And so when you apply that to copy, there's no difference. You know, you have a fantastic technical writer that can take a complexity and distill it into the most easily understood white paper that someone would have never been able to grasp if not for their creative and their ability to actually, you know, persuade and present information really articulately. Then you have a creative writer that could never ever do that, but can, you know, look at 20 words in an ad copy sequence and be so perfect in terms of word selection that copy just leaps off the page. So what we decided to do is we're like, okay, so internally at Copycat, let's build a team of channel experts. Mm-hmm. So we have dedicated editors in blog, dedicated editors in web, dedicated editors in email and social, and then dedicated editors in white papers and ebooks. But in our writing team, let's build the verticalized expertise. So let's go and find writers that have a background in fintech, that have a background in finance, that have a background in health and wellness. And then let's build a hive mind out of these two individuals. So now you have the channel expertise in editing, and then you have the direct expertise of the industry. And what we're doing is we're not just solving talent acquisition problems for an agency. We're actually improving the quality from the outset in terms of matchmaking.
And so as you start to develop this renegade group, you bring on more creatives, you bring on more folks that can fill these different verticals that you're starting to lean into. At what point were you like, I've got a business here? Like, this is starting to work and see some traction.
Probably 2020. Really interesting time for us, because we, I think at that point, had about six like internal copycats. And I say internal with quotation marks, because at the time we were still all outsourcers. Like, we hadn't really formalized the business entirely.
Yeah.
And we had about like 20 writers. So there was about 26 individuals that, you know, were writing for this engine. And at that point, it started to feel like, okay, this is getting not only real, but also like it's being further validated by agencies, because we had more and more agencies coming to us, hearing about the model and saying, hey, we've been having a lot of difficulty finding writers, figuring out how to scale our content offering. And we feel like we can only move as fast as we can find new writers that can sell the content that's packaged into the services that we're offering. That's when it felt real for us. Also, Roman, in 2020, we brought on our first investment. We had an angel investor that stepped in and was like, let me, you know, provide some resources and capital to build a better backbone so you can make some healthier decisions for growth.
Yeah. And so when you brought on that first investor, were you in the market to raise capital? And then what was the vision that you presented to that investor to make them say, okay, I want to make this angel, highly risky angel investment to generate a return on my capital in the future? How did the conversation go? Did you plan for it? What was the vision cast at that point in time?
Yeah, the vision cast at that point in time was, let me use this capital to formalize the business, invest in our own marketing and branding so that we could actually get to a place to make a formal raise and raise a seed round. We had already proven market viability. The model was pretty sound at that point. There was a huge need for content, obviously. At the time, you know, there's a massive market cap. There still is. Yeah. Obviously, it's a little bit different now in terms of some of these new paradigm shifts we've seen, namely with AI. That was the vision. It was, you know, give us a little bit of jet fuel just to get to a place where we can make a formal raise, because I'm pretty confident that with the capital injection, we can cut out 2 to 3 years of this journey, despite being fully confident that we'd get there organically.
Yeah. And when you say this journey, what was that end goal or like pie in the sky ideation around what you could build?
Yeah, we were building the number one premium one-stop shop copywriting team for all agencies, not just digital agencies, digital branding, design. And the idea was atop, you know, actually building this incredible agency for copy, we were going to use copywriting as a vehicle to then begin empowering the creative projects of the writers here.
Yeah.
You know, so because the writers here, they all have so much IP, you know, from manuscripts that they're working on to their own screenplays to their own pilots and series. What we wanted to do at the time, that primary vision was, let's use copywriting to monetize this incredible skill set that everyone has. But once we get to a certain place in time, let's start establishing relationships with publishers and with studios, and let's start leveraging the IP of Copycat to become more of a creative house. I think I've told you this before, but to us, like, one of the first like true milestones of success was going to be when we cut the copywriters out of our name and just became Copycat.
Yeah, I like that. That's an interesting segue to why Copycat. What does Copycat mean? What was the name? How did you come up with that?
That's really, really great question. You know, Copycat was a name that we ideated upon for quite some time. You know, one of the things that was happening a lot at the time, specific to SEO, is everyone was trying to you know, create content to rank for these specific SERPs. But often what copywriters would do is they would go out and look at like the five articles that are ranking the best. Then they would take that, use that as like their primary basis of research, and then build their own article based off of that. So like we already saw these kind of mechanics of like copying to some degree, and definitely not pointing to plagiarism, but I'm just saying everyone was kind of doing the same thing, which makes sense because SEO is a formula at the end of the day. So, you know, given that we are copywriters and given that we saw this mechanic, we thought if we called ourselves copycat, we could kind of reverse engineer the name and give it a new meaning. And then additionally, we just love cats. That's kind of a simple component to it, but I like it.
Okay. Yeah. Very nice. So you, at this point in time, 2020 through, let's say 2023, 2022, you're plumbing this engine, you're signing new deals, you're working with agencies, you're getting the creator onboarded, you're fulfilling demand in terms of number of words written. And that's along. Did you raise that seed round?
We did. Yeah. We raised a seed round in 2021 on the same exact model with one other component, which is that we're going to stand up a copycat classroom to teach other individuals how to write copy. And how to write copy with copycat's methodology, and then also use that as a talent acquisition pipeline. You know, one of the interesting components of our own talent acquisition is that we found, you know, in our journey, we kind of found that working with creatives that were focusing in their own genre that had never learned how to write through the lens of performance marketing would typically approach copy through copycat's methodology with a little bit more dynamism. It's not to say that we didn't work with any copywriters or would like turn away copywriters, but it was just part of our process and it really seemed to fit our model. So we thought building this classroom, we'd be able to create a little bit more reach there, but we ended up abandoning that idea in 2022.
Yeah. As most founders experience, of course, of business building, you know, it's a journey. There are pivots, there are evolutions to what that initial vision is. And as a founder, you're marching squarely towards the path that you set out from the beginning.
Yeah.
Seed round. What's going through your mind then? Like, hey, we're doing this. Let's keep building on it. Let's scale it. Let's figure out how internally to make this available to more clients. How are you feeling at that point in time?
We are feeling fantastic, to be honest. The investment did everything that it was supposed to. You know, we brought on some more teammates. I think going into 2023, we had just about 20 copycats internally, over 80 writers in the outsourced ecosystem. And up to that point, you know, our primary focus was growth. So we were reinvesting in the company at every turn. We weren't very concerned with EBITDA. We weren't even really looking at any sort of like North Star in terms of an exit strategy. We just wanted to build the best version of this business. And for us, that meant really drilling down into our creative disciplines, finding more incredible writers and finding more agency clients. So for us, given that that was our focus, we found the right team, an absolutely incredible, talented team of writers and beyond, and we just scaled. One of the other things to mention there in terms of a byproduct of our model that we didn't really foresee entirely, but became a huge positive during that era, is given that copycat's a scalable team, a lot of agencies would start with us with like a certain contract because that was the content that they were currently fulfilling with their clients. But they realized that with a turnkey solution, they could go out and sell more. So then they would just open up their sales pipeline and onboard at a volume and velocity that they typically wouldn't otherwise had if not for copycat. So a lot of our growth actually came from our existing clientele just scaling their own offerings. Case in point, you know, by the end of 2022, we'd been operating for about 2 to 3 years and we didn't even have a marketing or sales department. We had one marketing channel live that like we really took care of and managed and monitored and continued to pour our resources into, which was cold out.
Wow. So as a founder, you know, you're moving from 6 to 20 internal team members, from 20 to 80 copywriters that you're onboarding, you're training, you're getting moving. I suspect through that, just that few years in that point in time, the stress level on you and the leadership team I suspect had to be through the roof because you're just trying to figure things out. You're kind of getting pulled and pushed in directions that maybe were unforeseen at the time, but like, well, stress wise, anxiety wise, like how are you doing at that point?
Yeah, that was a pretty interesting thing to grapple with as we were scaling. I think Copycat is one of those companies, you know, if you quantify, there's probably three primary reasons why a company fails. And let's just say a startup fails. Number one, they run out of cash. I mean, cash is king. That's, you run out of money, you're done. That's, or if you can't raise more money after that. The second is scaling too quickly. A lot of companies scale so fast that they don't build infrastructure along the way. They don't systematize the right way. But they're potentially chasing vanity metrics as opposed to really looking at how sound this business model is. You know, they're looking at ARR, they're looking at growth, they're looking at, you know, the weighted sales pipeline and what their projections are for the next year. And then the third, I would reckon, is probably style drifting, is losing focus on what the primary core offering was. Yeah. And I think as Copycat, you know, scaled and scaled, one of the hardest things to manage and one of the things that really did create not only a sense of anxiety, but an extreme workload that accompanied the scale is probably at that time, right after the investment, I realized, oh, wow, we're actually scaling a double-sided marketplace. Yeah. We're scaling two businesses. One of them makes money and the other develops a team of 80 writers. And both need the same amount of resource allocation, both need the same amount of care, both need the same amount of discipline and planning and management. Because you're literally nurturing and developing the individuals that are then fulfilling the promise that you're selling to the market. That was a complexity that really scaled. And I'll give you another example of this that I think you might find interesting. Do you know how with like just a general business practice is that if you buy wholesale, we're going to discount the price. If you purchase a larger order, you get a 10% discount, you know, we're going to meet you where you're at because we value, you know, this purchase transaction and what it does for cash flow and X, Y, and Z. So for Copycat, we modeled ourselves like that. We're like, okay, you know, buy a bigger contract and a bigger retainer over $10,000 a month, we're going to start giving you discounts here and discounts there. What we failed to realize is that the higher the volume of content that we were producing across multiple different industries for multiple of our agency partners, for us, there is actually a tipping point where the complexity scales immeasurably. Because now it's not just four or five writers in a single pod. Now it's 10 writers, two of which are specialized for two of the clients. You have three editors. You have a brand new system you need to build for this client to retain the quality and keep the entire process and workflow intact. So one of the biggest mistakes I would say that I made personally is not recognizing that complexity, because here we are now doubling our output to make an agency partner happy with, you know, purchasing this huge bulk order. And yet we're not valuing it the right way.
Man. So you're building out the systemization of quality control, of fulfillment, navigating the path of how to effectively do that and not just do.
Yeah.
And you grow significantly.
Yeah.
2022. Yeah. And from what I understand, you had pretty massive growth goals going into 2023. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What happened next?
Oh man. Yeah. That was a time, Roman. Unsure if you've heard of ChatGPT. It's this robot that writes content that you plug into and pay $20 a month for. So going into 2023, you know, I'm imagining that this is a part of multiple businesses forecasting and projecting where they're pre-revenue, they go out and then they start selling. And at some point they're like, okay, now the model needs to work and we need to make money and we need to, you know, yield and be able to control a certain amount of EBITDA and yada, yada. 2023 was that year for us. Mm-hmm. We had just continuously reinvested in Copycat. And then 2023, we're like, okay, this year, our primary focus is going to be margin. It's going to be about improving workflow. It's going to be doubling ARR. We had doubled our ARR, by the way, every year up to this point. So that wasn't like as big of a target, but we wanted to do that at the same time that we were going to get really, really, really disciplined internally. And we had the entire team set in position. We are going to allocate our first like massive amount of resource and capital towards marketing and towards sales to even further push this drive. And then in November, ChatGPT launched. And, you know, for us, we had been kind of seeing this collective chatter and consciousness grow around AI. You know, Jasper was around at that time, but no one was really using like human and AI interchangeably in any context. You know, AI at the time was very much a tool that you use to improve workflow, to automate certain systems and beyond. So when ChatGPT came on, I mean, I'm sure everyone remembers this, but it was so quick and it was so rapid that we went from talking about AI to talking about an AI language model to talking about AI replacing human writers in what to me honestly felt like 60 days.
And at what point do you make the realization that this is going to drastically alter the landscape of the business that I have built over the last few years?
Oh, as soon as it started trending in media, because oftentimes it's very difficult to separate hype from function.
Oh, yeah.
And anything that's getting hyped that has technological innovation, you know, sitting above it as a categorical umbrella, everyone is going to start researching. Everyone is going to start considering. Everyone is going to start orienting to. And I knew right there and then that ChatGPT was going to be an issue for us, even if it was just an issue in terms of how our language needed to change in our, you know, sales conversations, our positioning in the market. I did not anticipate the impact it would actually have.
Sure.
Going into the next year.
Yeah, and nobody could have anticipated that impact. But when you see them release numbers of how quickly got to 1 million users, to 10 million, to 100,
yeah,
to 200 million, you start to get a sense as to the impact that it can create. It's not,
yeah,
that point in time, early adopters. Like, this is mass market adoption in
mass,
the quickest amount of time possible.
Yeah.
And so 100%. So at that point in time, do you just get the leadership team together and are like, we got to make some moves? Or like, how did you methodically walk through that? Or was it methodical?
You know, it was part methodical, part reacting, part, you know, spinning around in all different directions. Look, ChatGPT, I want to make it really clear. ChatGPT is an incredible tool.
Yeah.
And Copycat as a company is not anti-AI. And I totally understand the market and the way that so many individuals and entities kind of sprang forward to adopt it, because here's this brand new language model that can significantly improve bottom line in a industry whose credo is content is king. You know, it's like one of it's the lifeblood of the industry in so many ways. It makes so much sense to me. But for us, where we were in that is like, we were watching it happen. We recognized that it was going to be a threat. And so we started building our own models and doing our own testing.
Okay.
You know, adopting AI was never a choice for us. Like, you know, we were so committed to our writing team and still are, you know, that none of that has changed. And to this day, Copycat does not use ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. But at the time it was just like, let's understand exactly what the capacity and the output is. Okay. So that we can better navigate Copycat as we, you know, kind of step into this new quagmire. And the reality is that it wasn't effective for Copycat. Mm. You know, if you look at ChatGPT as a language model and you start kind of prompting it to just build content, one of the first things that we recognized is, as a basis, it's making narrative decisions based on all the content that we're trying to outperform. And a lot of that content isn't even well written or thoroughly researched or accurate, even to that degree. And so there's this really interesting component when it comes to editing at Copycat that I love to speak about here, if that's all right.
Oh, yeah. Dive in.
You know, I guess I could kind of equate it to, if you're going to remodel or rebuild a home, let's say you purchase a home, a fixer-upper, and you're going to go in there and, you know, figure out how to make some improvements and make this the home of your dreams. If that home you know, upon inspection has a poor foundation, then it wouldn't really make sense to build atop that. It's not a strong structural decision. You would likely just tear it down and rebuild the foundation. Well, at CopyCat, part of our journey with clients is we get tons of requests to edit content. Hey, here are 15 blogs that we wrote last year that we want to revamp and we want to elevate. Hey, here's this piece of content that didn't work. Can you edit it and make it work? And more often than not, we say no. We can't edit this because the fundamental narrative decisions that were made are flawed. And if we're going to do anything on top of this, we're just going to be working on shoddy infrastructure. And this piece that we're working on isn't going to realize its full potential. So we can rewrite it for you, and we would love to do that. And ChatGPT represented a dynamic of this for us, where we basically brought our strongest editors together, and we're like, okay, let's actually test the model against the writing that we're doing in real time. And let's figure out what it takes in terms of throughput to get this piece from the chat generated prompts into a piece that has the CopyCat standard of quality. And more often than not, it was a lesser outcome. It just was a more difficult piece to shape. The narrative decisions, again, were not as strong as they could have been. And what you're left with is a piece of content that, while it may have some inklings of promise, hasn't realized its potential in terms of CopyCat's purview or vantage point.
So you've used the term narrative a lot.
And
narrative, for me as a non-creative in your world, I think about that as storytelling and the importance of that throughout the message that you're trying to deliver. How do you think about narrative?
I think about that's it's a great question, Roman. And when I'm using it in this context, I'm using it in terms of the thinking, all the thinking that is done prior to a single word being written. I think often, you know, the industry sometimes thinks, so you're a copywriter, you just go in and step in and write. But there are a ton of decisions to be made, right? Who is this piece for? And what is the language model of the person that is going to be reading this? How can I validate this piece in a way that the other pieces aren't or the competition isn't? How do I structure this piece to get to the point as quickly as possible and not bury the lead? You know, those are the narrative decisions. It's like literally how you're structuring the content, the information flow, and what just the total composition of the content's going to look like.
Okay. So it's far more than just telling the story. It's the structure. It's the cadence. It's the audience.
Exactly.
It's multifaceted.
Exactly. It's where you're drawing your research from. It's, you know, how you're going to actually position the brand. Is there core values that you can pull into the forefront? Can you tie the mission to the topic? Yeah, exactly. And
so when you think about narrative relative to this innovation that's coming out in large language models, the last thing that I want to do as somebody who's putting content out into the ether is to have a narrative that doesn't connect, that regresses to the mean, and just gets lost in translation in a sea of content online. And that's what we're fight against when you start to allude to building quality narratives. Am I on the right track?
You're absolutely on the right track. Yeah. If you actually like, if you kind of put it all in a vacuum, and let's say that in this environment, all of us are using ChatGPT to market. And one of the prerequisites of us going and building content is prompting in ChatGPT, then the only people that have benefited are those that were producing content that could not outperform the very base layer of ChatGPT, which is typically low effort, low intentioned content. So just to get back on track in terms of what you had asked, the ChatGPT didn't work for CopyCat. You know, we had built this premium model and our writing team couldn't adopt it and we didn't want to. But what ended up happening is that given that it was so new and it represented such a big opportunity, a lot of these big deals that we were just about to sign that were actually like baked into our projections and runway, and a lot of the typical content volume that we're used to baking into what the runway and the forecast was going to be for the next year, just kind of evaporated or was put on hold overnight. And this happened at the same time that we had made a ton of staffing decisions based on hitting these projections. So you could make an argument that we were a lot more bloated than we'd ever been going into a new year. And so it was pretty devastating for us. We really, really couldn't slow it down. And it entered every single conversation. We had clients asking us if we could train their language models, if we would be willing to edit all of their AI content as opposed to being their writing team. And again, I understand the rush to adoption. For us, it was just very hard to understand the functionality when it didn't hit the standard that we were used to performing at. And come January of 2023, it really looked like we were going to have to make some critical decisions. By February, we had reached the most devastating point in my personal career as an entrepreneur, which is that we had to restructure the business. And I had to say goodbye to some individuals that I genuinely, genuinely adored and had seen the full vision of Copycat playing out with.
And that's like the hardest thing for any founder, CEO, leader to go through, making that decision, despite it potentially being the right thing for the business. I think there's an incredible silver lining in that the way in which you built a fulfillment engine of creatives who didn't ever know copy existed, opportunity for them to generate income, the just mental capacity that you opened up for those individuals to explore ways to utilize their creative powers. Equipping them with that, even if their future was not with Copycat to begin with, they're now equipped with a lot more intelligence for their future state, which I think is so cool.
100%. And it was an exciting and still is an exciting thing that we endeavor to do, which is help writers realize their potential in copy or introduce them to the media.
And so, around the same time, you find yourself on a flight to Brazil heading to a remote island without internet.
Oh yeah, that story. It was one of those true Murphy's Law situations. I think before making any decisions like this, there's typically like multiple different triggers that need to occur before you're like, okay, Copycat can no longer financially sustain this team, and we have to make these very tough decisions. And kind of the last trigger occurred as I was heading to an island that was in the north of Brazil. I was in a location called Bahia at the time that had no internet or electricity. It was an island that's just completely remote, no motorized vehicles. I was going to be there for 3 days with my family. So in the middle of that travel, I recognized what was about to happen and what we had to do. And obviously I'm not going to go and stay in this island anymore. I have to go back and work with the team and troubleshoot. So I turned around mid-journey and ended up at a hotel in a location that I really had no business being in. It was actually quite dangerous. Boarded myself up in a hotel room and was like, okay, I'm going to troubleshoot and, try and figure out how to just, stabilize at least enough to put a plan in place when I get back to the US. And so I spent 5 days doing that, but I think another part of this that was just kind of unbelievable is that the first day that I was in that hotel room, I started smelling something off and I turned around and there was an electrical fire that started. And I was just like, this is really happening right now.
Hindsight, it may be a little bit easier to laugh about now, but in the moment, like your world's crumbling and you're not in a place to be able to be with your team, to be present with them, to make those decisions like locked arms. You're in a dangerous part of Brazil with an electrical fire in your room.
Yeah. Gosh. It was devastating. Yeah, it was. It kind of was one of those moments where you're really looking ahead and you're saying, okay, right now I'm in a defining moment, and how I choose to rise to it will define this pursuit and potentially the next couple of years of my life. And there are a couple of options here, and one of them is to let this overtake you and let the complete emotionality sink in. And there is space for that. There's space for that in every journey like this. But the other is to just do what you know how to do and get to work and start thinking and problem solving and figuring out what the next pivot's going to be, where the market's going to go, and what we can still do to survive in that moment. I laugh about it now because of the absurdity of it all. There was zero laughter for about 3 months of my life. That moment.
Oh, man. So all of that culminates to this moment of extreme stress and a lot of pain and challenge and decision making. but like a phoenix, you rise and you work through it and you make a plan. Yeah. You start reinventing copycat to what does 2.0 look like? And so subsequent to that decision making, to that point in time in your journey, what did that lead to over the last 12 months?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's definitely the silver lining of all this. So the first thing that I want to point at is that the team that remained at Copycat are so incredibly talented and so ambitious and inspired and so multifaceted that we literally got together as a company and just had this war chant, this rally call of like, we are not going to lose, number one, to a robot, which was kind of just a funny theme that we could add into the conversation. But two, that there had to be a path forward here. Mm-hmm. And what we kind of decided to do in the moment there is just first outline everybody's skill sets and everybody's strengths. Take a look at, you know, the current runway and what our projections were like moving forward. You know, do all the crisis monitoring, reaching out to the team, making updates. But then we started to really look at the model and we said, you know, if this scalable writing team, this premium team that's going to elevate the standard of copy is going to be devalued to some degree just by the basis of having access to a language model like ChatGPT, maybe this isn't our North Star anymore as a business model. So let's revisit this and let's try and figure out what the next iteration of Copycat is going to become. And we took a really interesting approach to finding the answer, which is what we decided to do is a biopsy on the last 4 years of work to identify what obstacles were in our way that didn't allow us to produce the best content and the best writing for each client, that didn't allow us to realize our potential as a writing team. And one of the primary things that we ended up landing on is working with companies that hadn't invested or done the work to truly understand their brand narrative, to truly flesh out their core value system and what really differentiates them both as an entity and as a team. They hadn't really looked at the emotional impact of their product and services and really just didn't give us a rule set, because in our world, it's not uncommon that, you know, we get a very vague prompt in terms of building content and then a single sentence that says, look to the website for brand and tone. And the website might be a half-baked, you know, whole page scroll through. And we're tasked with writing incredible, remarkable content that's going to convert and help them hit their goals. And in that, that's when the very first kind of tenet of a narrative agency was born, which is what we're about to launch and scale into in about a month.
Yeah. Oh, I love that, because you're now equipping those who have never thought about this creative lens, this narrative for their creating something out of dust for them.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That must feel rewarding to have a little bit of clarity and purpose moving forward with a different lens on how you can serve others through the creative engine built.
Yeah. And also to help them, you know, not make the same mistakes. You know, a startup that hits the market and is just so focused on performance marketing and a lot of short-term wins, like being able to be a part of their process and say, hey, let's take a really quick step back, look at the story you're telling. Let's make sure it's the right story in terms of how your audience is going to resonate. Okay. And then let's make sure that story shows up everywhere, across every channel, across all marketing collateral. Let's make sure that story defines you alongside the quality of your product or service, which is, you know, our primary focus. Now.
That's awesome. And so what's a typical size of company or stage of company that you're seeing that can benefit from this type of exercise?
Yeah, it's typically right now, it's usually startups that are just hitting the market or even new product launches, because we can build narratives specific to products. Yeah. And then also mid-market companies that are taking a step back. Maybe messaging isn't working like it used to. They're not garnering the attention that they're really looking for. Maybe they have, you know, fragments as they've been, you know, scaling. Their sales department communicates about the company a certain way, leadership about a certain way. You know, the interns in a certain way, and somewhere in the middle of all that is their actual story. And that's what they're trying to figure out. But primarily mid-market in that size for Copycat, right?
Okay.
Now.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I suspect that, you know, through the advent of ChatGPT and similar tools, there are significant number of other industries and businesses who are also going through similar evaluation that you did with Copycat of our industry is changing so fast and we need to figure out how to modify our plan. And thus that in and of itself opens up a new opportunity to rebrand, build narrative, get creative, and thus may potentially open up more opportunity for Copycat.
That's exactly right. And I mean, right now, you know, one of the things that we're seeing with AI is that there's just so much content being published.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you experience this every day just scrolling through LinkedIn. And a lot of the content just reads like it came from the same exact ether. And thus you have this echo chamber and you're hearing it everywhere. You know, customer acquisition costs is on the rise. B2B purchasers are becoming more emotional. It just feels like in general, it's shoulder to shoulder marketing. Our email inboxes are spam overload.
Yeah.
And, you know, garnering attention and really cutting through the noise is becoming more and more difficult year over year.
Yeah.
And what that signifies to us is going back to the roots, you know, going back to the promise, looking at the brand and trying to say, okay, how can I actually validate my consumer, not only through what I'm trying to achieve as a business, but through where they want to go? You know, what is their specific pain point and need that we can start really, really communicating about, maybe adding value to them outside of our product and service, and doing so with this North Star in frame.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that we're communicating right now, Roman, is that, you know, we try and encourage companies to keep their North Star behind their decision-making and in front of their customers. Mm. And if you look at a lot of industries right now, that same phenomenon, even if it's not spoken with the same language, is kind of occurring. You know, everyone's like, okay, in this sea of everything, it's great creative that wins. Yeah. And it's brands that we actually believe in that are really rising to the top.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, Full Send as an entity has experienced a lot of that in our industry of accounting services that just puts out a lot of stale and or no content. Like that totally resonates. And you brought up LinkedIn and I've enjoyed seeing your increased activity on LinkedIn. Some of the narrative and some of the posts that you have are so far outside of what you typically see that it captures my attention every time I see it. And I think something about a zucchini. So there's a lot of vegetables and a lot of animals. It's cool stories and analogies, parallels. I love it.
Yeah. It's this, I've been building this world of fruit for a very long time called Xanderbar. And in this world, vegetables are also fruit and technology is also fruit. And this world got stuck in the 1990s. But anyhow, the reason why you're hearing about zucchinis is because zucchinis and apricots are the protagonists of this world. They're starting to show up in the messaging.
It's so good, man. Well, there are so many areas that I know to be true about Copycat and about you that we didn't dig into today.
Yeah.
And your journey as a founder is, it's really impactful and it's fascinating. And I think a lot of people can learn from how some of this decision making has been navigated. I feel like you've handled that with such class and it's been cool to observe and to learn more about. And man, I'm super grateful for folks like you to tell these types of stories in the market.
Roman, thank you so much. And thank you so much for having me on this as well.
Yeah.
Really, really looking forward to this next iteration of marketing and where we're going, because I think collectively, even through conversations like this, you know, we're further prioritizing the consumer and just going back to great fundamental storytelling.
Yep. I 100% love that statement. Where can people find you?
At copycatcopywriters.com, which is soon to go through a bit of an overhaul as we are losing the copywriters on our name finally and just becoming Copycat, a narrative agency. And then through my LinkedIn at Sean Rolfe.
Sean Rolfe. Perfect. Well,
yeah.
Man, thanks so much, man. This has been awesome.
Yeah. Thank you, Roman. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Building in the Wild. If you found value in our conversation, we'd appreciate a review on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. To stay up to date, make sure to hit that subscribe button. For more insights and additional information, our YouTube is at Full Send Finance and our website is fullsendfinance.com. Remember, the business landscape may be wild, but you don't have to navigate it alone. Build together, go further.